December 23rd, 2003. This is an interview for the Veterans History Project. I'm talking to Mr. James A. Rose, 831 Northgate, Toledo, Ohio, 43612. Telephone 419-476-0093. Mr. Rose was born in Toledo, Ohio, on July 3rd, 1924. He went to Woodward High School, and before we get to your service time, Mr. Rose, let's talk about the illness you had that almost kept you out of the service.
Okay. I was 5 years old, and I got pneumonia. And I had, was very sick. In them days, that was a death sentence. The doctor, old Dr. Briggs, come to our house in a horse cart. And the doctor told our family that I would not live till morning. But I survived. But I had went into the rickets, and I had a very bad nerve problem. And I didn't learn to walk till I was 6 years old. And through my life, I was very sickly. And one day my mother took me to the doctor. I was about 12 years old. And the doctor said, this boy will never live to be a man. And I said that myself that I will. I met an acrobat that was taking care of Riverside Park. And he said that he would work with me. He had parallel bars and different things to work with. And he worked with me and built my body up.
So you, by the time were of draft age or able to join the service, you were back in normal health? So.
Yes, I was in pretty good health at that time, yes.
So now were you drafted or did you join the service?
My buddy and I, about 60 years, he was called into the service with about 5 or 6 years old when we first met. And him and I go around, so I went down and volunteered for the draft. but it was in January when I volunteered, but March that they took me in.
Uh-huh. And where did you take basic training?
I took basic training in Camp White, Oregon.
Mm-hmm. And from basic training then, where did you go?
I stayed in Camp White, Oregon, and then they put me with the 81st General Hospital, mm-hmm. and trained with them until about January of 1944. Mm-hmm. And 1944, we went to Camp Miles Standish, and we stayed there for a while. Then we went to on board ship the 28th of February, and we landed in Liverpool, England, March 11th of 1944.
Now, did you go across the ocean in convoy?
When we got up with a group of ships, any direction you looked, all you could see was ships across the ocean. They were preparing for the Normandy invasion.
I see.
And when we landed in Liverpool, it was so foggy you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And we was rammed by a Russian freighter. We all thought the Germans had hit us because we had an awful noise. When the fog cleared up, there was a Russian freighter with the front knocked off. And they told us on the intercom that the Russian freighter hit us and put a hole big enough in the side of the ship that they could run a 2-ton truck through, but it was above the waterline. We weren't going to sink.
So you didn't have any U-boat scares on the way over?
No. No.
By this time, maybe the
it was pretty well under control. We had Navy escort.
Yes, I see. So you landed in England.
Yes.
And went from there
to Wales.
To Wales, I see.
And set up a general hospital. Uh-huh. They were preparing for the World War II Normandy invasion. Uh-huh. And
Now, you did not go over on D-Day?
No. Now, little story, my brother was in London, and I was in Wales. And we was writing back and forth to each other, and we were going to meet the 5th of June. I went to get a pass, and the colonel says, you can't have one. And I was pretty mad. And next morning, the 6th of June, we heard airplanes in the sky. And in that time of the year, in that country, part of the country, the sky is pretty light, the northern part of it. And all I could look up, and all I could see was bombers and fighter planes and planes with gliders. I said, uh-oh, something big's happening. And that was the day of Normandy.
Well, you all knew that there would eventually be an invasion, didn't you?
Yes.
Everybody knew.
Yeah.
The question is where and when.
Yeah. We didn't know.
Yeah.
But anyhow, the colonel told me after that, if you'd have went into town, they'd have picked you up, and you'd have been the first one of them at the beach.
And your brother went into the beaches, did he?
No, he was with the railroad battalion.
Oh, I see.
He went over after the invasion started.
So when did you then go to the continent?
When they had the Battle of Balls start right around Christmas time,
uh-huh.
We were starting to get a lot of casualties.
Uh-huh.
I was hauling these casualties in off of the beaches, too. I seen all this mess coming in. These people shot up and tore up.
Off of the beaches?
Off of the beaches,
yeah. And where was this?
I was at a general hospital in Wales. And I was at that time, they was using a lot of us. All we had coming in, convoy of ambulances, and we were unloading them into the hospital.
Uh-huh.
And
so how did you get from a general hospital to be an aide, a medic?
Well, I had trained in medical. They trained us how to put bandages on broken bones and how to stop bleeding and stuff too. When I was back in Camp White.
But isn't a general hospital back from the line?
Oh, definitely.
But you are now up there.
Well, what happened is when the Battle of the Bulge happened, they put out a call for medical aid men. They were losing so many medical aid men that they needed them. So six of us from the general hospital volunteered. And that was in December of 44.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over to France in January of 44. And we were on a 48 cars going where we was going to be. We didn't know where. But it was snow on the ground. It was colder than the devil. And it was at night, and we were all sleeping. They packed us in them cars. We were packed, and they had the doors closed on us. All of a sudden, the train came to a sudden stop. It wasn't too long. He opened up the door and let us out. And the car ahead of us was on the ground, over on its side, and a whole pile. They had a pile of train wreck. And our car stopped before it got into the wreck.
A 48 is the old
boxcar.
Four horses.
Yes.
From World War I.
Yeah.
Right. So now you are heading for the front.
I headed towards an area to get where they sign you.
Mm-hmm.
And this delayed us quite a bit. So it was February before I went into assignment. They put us in a big place over there, what they call them, where the memory gets a little bad at times. A chateau, vague, large chateau.
Uh-huh.
And we were staying in that till they called us to go. Now, the time lapse and things doing that when you're not doing anything, you don't realize it all. But one day they took me and two other from that would come over and volunteered as aid men, and they took us to the area where the Rainbow Division was organized and rebuilding their troops up, because they lost an awful lot of men. And Malcolm Hawes and Johnny Flynn was the other two that I went with. Three of us went to the Rainbow, but I never seen them after that. But that I ended up with the 242nd.
And where did they see action?
I have no idea.
I mean, when you were with them. No, where did your unit see action?
I went with them. Organized us and talked to us and introduced us to people. And by the first part of March, we went on the line. They were at a stalemate. As they were building up troops, we were in the Heart Mountains, and we were went into these foxholes. And I went along with the platoon of the 42nd, 242nd Company I, what I was with. And we were on the line, actually. And you could see the Germans across the way. And they would send patrols into Germany, combat patrols and scouting patrols. On a combat patrol, they go over to find the enemy, and they would get a firefight with them and try to capture them and upset them a little bit. They'd done the same thing to us. In a scouting patrol, they went over into the line and checked to see if they could see how many troops was building up what they had. And it was a scary deal.
And did you go with these scouting patrols?
When they had a combat patrol, yes. At times. And now, I didn't go into too many of them, but I did go to some of them. And because they needed a medic with them, because they did get wounded when they were going. Now, when you're on the line, people don't realize that I was in a foxhole alongside of the officer, the lieutenant and the sergeant, platoon sergeant, and maybe the next group of men would be a couple hundred yards away from you, and you were scattered out in a large area, and there were a lot of open space between you and anybody else. You knew they were there when you'd hear them fire a rifle or a machine gun or something. And I did get caught out of the hole, and a platoon runner took me for a walk on the line. We got about 200 yards from the foxholes, and the Germans start shooting at with a machine gun and start firing mortars in, and it was tree burst, and we run like the devil back to the foxhole. And I got just before the foxhole where the lieutenant sergeant was, and I heard that machine gun fire hitting right by me. So I went down on my knees and dove into the foxhole. When I got into the foxhole, here was a platoon sergeant, was standing in the opening when a tree burst hit, and he was full of wood splinters all over his face, his arm, and his chest. And this is my first casualty of the battle.
You went into the woods somewhere. That was mine.
That was the first, the 15th of March was this. Better yet, the 14th of March, they pulled us off of the line. They come in, we come back, and we got into a group, and they told us what was going to happen the next morning. They said we were going to jump off the start of the battle to go to Germany towards the end of the war. We were going to start going into Germany and jump off. And we were in the Harz Mountains in a heavy wooded area. And where we jumped off was into the minefield. And as these young men start running into the minefield, they start getting their foot blowed off. We had a machine gun fire, and one man was hit and cut in two with this machine gun. He went into a praying position, and I thought he was alive and praying. So I walked out to the man, and he was dead, and there was a wire, and he must have been found and was looking at it. And evidently, it had to be that I decided this was the route the German took when they went through this minefield. Anyhow, I backed off from him, and I was real noisy. Artillery shells exploding in the trees, and hear the whine of the artillery shells going over in mortars, and these mines going off, and these young men hollering medic. And I walked up to these two fellows, and I said, I looked, and I seen an arm and part of a hand hanging in the crotch of a tree. And there was a chunk of back with a couple broken ribs on it, and all over the ground was scattered, looked like hamburg. And I asked what happened, and they said that he was hit with a Panzerfaust. He was a lead scout taken off, and when it hit him, it blowed him completely apart.
That was that handheld anti-tank gun that the Germans carried.
That's right, to knock tanks out, yes. Yeah. And they hit the man with it, and it blowed him completely apart. And at that time, I heard an explosion, and a man hollered, a medic. And he was about 70 feet from me. And I started walking to him, very, very scared. And the men told, the two men says, move left, get in line with him and walk from there, because that's where he walked in. So I started walking in that way, and when I got to him, his pant leg was gone, and I could see his leg bone, and at the end of the leg bone, I could see the ball of his ankle joint on the end of it, and alongside of it, his foot would land with the toes up. And I come up to the man, and I helped him lift him up and got him on his good foot. He put his arm around my neck, I put my arm around his waist, and him and I hopped back out of this minefield. I didn't know if we were going to step in or not. When I got him in, there was litter bearers with the litter. I helped put him on the litter, and they took him away. And another medic, another man hollered, medic. And it was a little bit farther down. I went to this man, and his foot was blowed off and part of his leg, and the bones were all splintered out. No blood. When this happens, it evidently they don't bleed right away. And I put him up on my shoulder and carried him back out of the minefield, and there was litter bearer waiting. They put him on a litter. And I went to another man a little bit farther down that had stepped on the mine, and it didn't blow the foot or the shoe off, but his leg, his foot was about even with his knee, and his leg was all puffed. I just crammed them bones up, and this man was out. He wasn't conscious. I picked him up, put him on my shoulder, and carried him back to put him on a litter. I got down to where I could see these engineers digging these mines out. There was a man, another one with the foot blown off. I walked out to him and picked him up and carried him back and put him on a litter. And then there was two men with the litter, and there was a man about 6 feet out from them, and they're standing there, the two of them. And I come up and I said, give me the end of the litter. And I walked out and set it down alongside the man, and I lifted him over on the litter. I picked one end up, walked out, and the other man took him and took him back to the aid station. Now this aid station was a couple hundred yards back of the line where this was all happening. I got five people that I know, but they tell me I took the sixth. If I did, I don't remember it. But when this ended, I start to shake. I got shakes. I just felt like I got to shake apart. And then I heard the officer call, come up. And he said, they got a path through. Engineers, I guess, or somebody said, one of the Germans